Hey folks, how's it going, Sharad?
Going great. I'm looking forward to another session today, and we've been doing some work on the decentralized finance and blockchain side of things, so it'll be interesting to hear someone who's dabbling somewhere in that space, I guess.
While Russia is bombing Ukraine, we will do the usual stuff of getting deep into various fintech models. And with that, I would like to welcome Milan. Hi, Milan, how are you?
Hey, good, great guys.
So, Milan is the founder of One Silver Bullet. And I could understand that obviously you guys look at building the interface between financial institutions, consumers, and developers through an API infrastructure. Coincidentally, we have had another guest about which I'll briefly touch upon later, who I think covered some similar territory, but would love to understand a bit about what One Silver Bullet does and your journey to date to start.
Great. So thanks, Nikhil. It's wonderful to catch up with you guys and just to kind of give you a bit of an update on my background. So I was earlier a founder CEO at a company called Mile Software, which was a product company focused on asset and wealth management. So we had clients in 28 plus countries. And 2018, where this idea of One Silver Bullet struck, and which is one of the reasons I sold my company, Mile Software. I was part of Miles until March of 2021, and I started the journey of One Silver Bullet. So currently, we have a team of 70 odd guys focused on creating a financial gateway. So financial gateway, we are focused on three clear verticals. One is the investment gateway, second is the insurance gateway, and the third is the lending gateway. And we see several use cases where we could play a significant role in digitizing areas which today are currently either done physically or manually, or done through a proprietary way of communicating with each other. So the thought process here is to have a standard protocol which will allow several stakeholders to communicate with each other. And so that there is no proprietary way of communicating with each other. So some of the things which all of us would have experienced is a UPI or a SWIFT network, which is what we are working to create for the investments, several investment products which today are still not digitized. And obviously, there'll be several types of communication which still remain to be manual. Can be potentially be digitized. So that's what is the idea behind One Silver Bullet. So I hope that Nikhil gives you some bit of clarity on this.
So, I mean, when you're looking at communication between different stakeholders, I mean, there must be some specific use cases or workflows, right, which you target. Could you maybe just, walk through an example to get a better understanding, for example, when it comes to lending?
So I'll pick up insurance to start with, if that's okay to you.
I started my
So
career with
insurance.
insurance, so
Oh,
I'm
wonderful,
always
Nikhil.
up for chatting about it.
Okay, great. Great, great, great. So Nikhil, there are 50, let's take example of India. There are 57 insurers in this country. Okay. And I am an insurance broker who is looking to sell insurance. All these 57 insurers are using disparate systems. And if I wanted to sell insurance digitally, whether I'm a broker or a tech-enabled platform, I have to integrate with some or all these 57 insurers, which is an extremely difficult, or I would not say difficult, but a very long drawn Herculean task to really do that job. So what we are offering to these tech-enabled platforms and these brokers is saying, hey, you just need to integrate with One Silver Bullet. In turn, you get integrations with all these 57. Now, let's take a very simple example where if a customer of these tech-enabled platforms is looking to buy an insurance policy, the first step is to get quotes from all the insurers in a single window. Mm-hmm. And one should be able to compare these quotes and then ability to kind of buy an insurance policy. So all this can be done using a standard API across all the insurance products and all the insurers. So that is what is One Silver Bullet all about. So I hope, Nikhil, that clarifies to you on one very basic use case.
Milind, like in this, I'm just trying to appreciate the difference between like a traditional marketplace, right, where you sort of get various policy issuers sort of list their products and allow the platform.
Perfect.
The platform allows you to compare and touch base on all of these things. So how do you sort of differentiate
Perfect.
From those folks? Yeah.
Okay, great. So if you really look at that, so there are only few such marketplaces which currently mm-hmm. exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing this. We are actually enabling more marketplaces to come into play.
Understood.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we are giving the plumbing mm-hmm. and let's say, for example, an existing pharma app
mm-hmm.
okay, is looking to start selling health insurance. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't want to go through the pain of integrating with let's say 20 odd health insurers.
Right.
Rather, they would just integrate with One Silver Bullet and they can build their own journeys, UI, UX, whatever they want to. But
mm-hmm.
the plumbing work is left to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to fuel more such aggregators today, which don't exist.
It's fascinating. I'm seeing it as from a very loosely comparable to what Shopify is doing for the e-commerce industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you can. Yeah. So very similar concept. But yeah, mm-hmm. we're doing it for the BFSI segment.
Fascinating. And just to get a sense, Milind, like, there's a lot of buzz about decentralized finance these days and sort of the role blockchain and technologies on that side of the world, when that angle sort of come in. How do you sort of merge that? I know because you do have a blockchain angle to your offering. How do you sort of blend that with traditional finance? And what are your views on decentralized finance? And how does sort of that fit into the wider, the way it seems? I mean, who knows, but the way it seems to be evolving is there is an element of decentralization creeping in, right?
Yeah, so one is decentralized. Let's say in our case, the use case which I am trying to pursue mm-hmm. at One Silver Bullet, it does not deal with decentralized finance, but we do is use blockchain for a couple of things. One is the advantage of blockchain being immutable,
yeah.
which is a very big advantage. So that if the logs are immutable, and whenever there's a communication between several stakeholders, you want to ensure that this logs can never be broken or can be fully be trusted. Now, to my mind, it adds a very trusted layer. That's point number one. And secondly, in the financial services space, one is getting into several transactions, whether he's investing or buying an insurance policy. The timeline or the authenticity of that transaction is, or credibility of that transaction is, or the contract is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And which is where using smart contracts for things like buying an insurance policy and making sure that the premiums are paid as per the smart contract. Although we still don't have a legal framework around using smart contracts in a complete way, but if we kind of start, I mean, make a beginning here, and I'm sure based on several regulations and papers which are being floated by the government of India, we think these smart contracts will become a reality and two transactions which takes place between two stakeholders can be regarded as a legal and a valid contract. To me, that is the most important factor on several transactions which play out in the financial services space. Okay, so as far as Silver Bullet is concerned, we kind of confined ourselves and limited ourselves to using smart contracts and for blockchain and not really for decentralized or distributed ledger. You know, so that's the use case which currently we are pursuing.
So I mean, Milan, like for example, in financial services, like there's an entire idea of the product manufacturer, right? Which are often traditional financial institutions, be it banks, be it asset managers, etc. And then you have, you know, the so-called new economy, fintech, digital-first players. So is it fair to say that, you know, you guys act as rails between the manufacturer as and the digital counterpart?
So we act between these guys so that their communication can be standardized and these fintechs don't have to worry about integrating with each and every single manufacturer with their disparate APIs and ways of communication. And there are several other use cases which are today beyond sales. And there are a lot of support support functions of a manufacturer also can be undertaken, which is, let's say, for example, the medical, your health check or your path lab reports can be submitted by these path labs to the insurer using a standard way of communication instead of they having a disparate, I mean, each of the insurers would have their own ways of getting those medical reports of the life insurers. Instead of that, they can get it in a standard uniform way. So there are several use cases which will allow us to create a standard messaging protocol. You know, that's what we are kind of, our use case is all about. I mean, basically, One Silver Bullet is all about creating a standard way of messaging between two guys.
Very interesting. So, this is a core tech play, right? I mean, you can obviously see that it's highly scalable as well, which speaks highly positively about the story. How do you sort of view growth? Is it sort of more about just adding on more subscribers and sort of growing, penetrating deeper into the ecosystem as more players come up? They sort of, you become the de facto choice of their API backend needs. Or is it sort of actually adding more verticals, sort of getting into standardizing? Now you've sort of touched upon insurance and lending and basic investments. Do you sort of go into different verticals across different sectors and start try to grow that way? How do you sort of see the growth come from?
So growth will come from two factors. One is obviously deepening this, which is where primarily as our phase one, we are focused only on investment and insurance. Lending is our phase two. So whether if we, I mean, and I believe there are enough volumes in these two and we may not be really required to get into lending, to be very honest. So I think the opportunity is immense in these two segments itself, which is the investments and the insurance, where there is a fairly large TAM which is available for us to really pursue this. And obviously expansion can, using the same protocol, will allow us to go to several other geographies, because this opportunity is not just confined to India, but can be rolled out to any other country and so on.
Understood. Sounds intuitive.
Just Milan, like how does the you know world like one end of it is, you know, like players like yourself, like One Silver Bullet, right? And on the other end, there are a lot of interesting things happening on the regulatory front as well, right? Like, for example, there's an entire conversation about having a account aggregation framework, right? Where data can be shared all across, you know, from taxation data to transactional data to lending data, and, you know, any provider, depending on specific use cases, subject to consent, can, you know, access other verticals of the consumer's data profile to more efficiently price the product, right? So is data sharing something in which you want to get into, I mean, from the perspective of ownership or custody of data, or it's
into data sharing, right? Because there's already an account aggregator which is the India stack, and I don't think one can do a better job than them. So right. I think data sharing is not what we will get into. We're going to enable basically any transaction communication between two guys. See, one is data sharing, right? And the other is technically can replace us in a thought process of Swift. Now, let's say Swift sends information regarding the payments, regarding any financial transaction in the investment space. All of them run through an ISO Swift format. So we're looking to really look at, you know, kind of creating a communication layer which can be standardized, so that when you have the data already available for account aggregator, you need to really, the next step is to really enable more transactions happening digitally.
Right.
So all the data which is available from account aggregator will be a kind of a moot point for recommending a product or getting a full view of few things, and then the end state is to really transact, right? Because the purpose of account aggregation is to really get enough information so that you could recommend a particular investment product, or you could kind of approve a loan. But end of the day, it is going to enable transactions, and which is where we believe we will be playing the role of a transaction,
right?
And the account aggregator will be playing the role of providing enough information,
right,
which will be kind of help, whether it is a robo advisor or a credit engine, to really approve loans and so on. But end of the day, those transactions have to flow through, and which is what will happen through a gateway. So that's really the thought process.
Right. You know, Milan, it's like we kind of come from a finance background, but but technology is one thing we often, I'm sounding like I'm 80, but I mean, that's something that we often struggle to, you know, understand, because, you know, if you look at like the competitive universe here, like, you know, we do have like players like Setu, we have guys like M2P. Correct. Incidentally, Madhusudan R also came over as a guest on Long Shots from M2P. That's the company I was thinking might be doing, sure, something very close to what you guys are,
correct,
doing. But I mean, absolutely, when it comes to API infrastructure, I mean, it is I'm pretty sure very quickly it tends to, you know, become a commodity, right? I mean, that standardization is the core crux here. So what exactly is the, I would say, moat or the differentiator? Like, how do different players, create that around them? Is it like different workflows which no one else is looking at, or, you know, manufacturers which no one else is targeting? Or the answer might just be like, you know, get a foot in the door with the guys, and then they kind of stick with you. How do you kind of rationalize that entire thing?
So I'll just tell you, so the key thing is, what you're trying to say is, how do you kind of create an adoption, right? So adoption will come through several angles. One is obviously creating the infrastructure which is extremely developer friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, can I really very quickly roll out an app? Can I really quickly integrate this? Can it be really a no-code platform? Can I really kind of, without doing too much of coding, how quickly can I really integrate on any gateway? You know, so that's part number one. Secondly, can this gateway can be reused, or the same APIs can be reused for larger amount of product set? So let's say, for example, can I use the same gateway for insurance and investment product using the same APIs, so that I don't have to relearn, redo anything, okay? So that, and which is where we're creating a width of product to allow using the same API. So if a particular neo bank or a broker who are or various fintech platforms or several tech-enabled platforms are looking to add more and more products because they already have acquired relationship with the customer. Now, how easily can we help them to really add more products, which is on the distribution side, and which in turn will put the pressure on the manufacturer side to adopt our platform? So focus is that, how quickly can we get more and more distributors adopt to our platform? How easy is for them? So that, and also, how good are we able to build analytics for the manufacturers of several financial products to do, know that why there is a dropout? Why, I mean, basically, kind of, obviously, to my mind, if we are early in days for investment and insurance, we do have is a possibly reasonable chances of success. But as you've seen in the erstwhile payment gateways, there is always a new player can always come and disrupt the incumbents. So like, for example, Razorpay came and actually disrupted to a certain extent PayU or BillDesk or so on. But the market's ever growing. So firstly, the pie is growing. We still, if you really look at digitization of a product like insurance, it's not more than 1%. So right now, 99% of the insurance is sold physical in nature, you know. So firstly, there is a play for several players. And obviously, the guy who's going to do a better job of creating enough tools for easy adoption can take a fairly large share of the market. But there is a play for several players. Okay, so I don't think so the play is meant for one or two players, but everybody's focusing on a different anchor point. M2P is focusing more on deposits, payments, and so on and so forth on the banking side. And we are focused on investment and insurance side. So everybody's focused on their set of anchor points.
Milind, like, you know, this is just to out of curiosity more than anything else, but, you know, being sort of becoming the de facto gateway for a lot of these guys will invariably aid in collecting a lot of data. You will be able to see a lot of data points on a daily basis based on transactions that are happening. Is that fair? And if so, that data...
No, we are not storing any data. So okay. Just to give you an idea, we are a pure gateway. We don't persist any data.
Okay, interesting. Okay. That data is sort of ring-fenced in your client's ecosystem.
Yes, absolutely. Because we just don't want to see that data. We don't want to touch that data because we don't own this data. And yeah, we do have logs, but they're extremely confined to whatever is bare necessary for us to have. And even whatever the PII information which exists is fully encrypted and masked. Okay, so that at no point of time we are able to kind of see this data, or we don't want to use this data because that would be a big deterrent for people to do, deterrent for them to really adopt our platform.
You know, I just like to now ask you a bit, not strictly from the perspective of one silver bullet, but your broader view on the sector. You know, especially you did mention insurance and investments, right? Now, there is one, obviously, there's growing digitization, and, you know, we see models like robo-advisory models or, you know, insurance aggregators, which are kind of increasingly being the port of call for a lot of customers when they are, you know, buying their first policy. But there are, you know, there are always that argument that, you know, as the ticket size grows, so for example, within insurance, you know, as long as you're looking at like car insurance or, you know, fire insurance or some sort of a PNC category, that is more commoditized. So that's something which is sold a fair bit digitally. But when you start looking at longer tail products, you know, be it life insurance, then, you know, generally you'd like to, at the end of the day, talk to a guy to purchase it. Similarly, on investment side as well, as the ticket size grows and, you know, when serious money is being pulled into, there is that, you know, traditional in-person advisory that does play a role. That at least that has played a role to date. And in India,
absolutely,
you know, India is anyways a slightly, I think, different market where there is an entire generation who, you know, would love to always, you know, sign a piece of paper or shake a hand before they, you know, transact. How do you see that evolve? Yes. Do you see that there's that place will always be there, albeit smaller, or that place will always be there for higher value?
That place will always remain.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I think that place will always remain. I don't think physical will ever go, number one. Rather, a physical advice will never go. Okay. So there are two things. One is, will the physical advice will ever go? The answer is no. I think, as you rightly said, when there is, I would not say serious money, I would say when there is, based on your wallet size, that's a significant amount of money which you're investing, it will be, it would require, I would say, a human validation. Now, this validation could be done in any shape and form, but that still does not take away the mode of execution, right? I may buy a property, okay, example, but I still do an RTGS to you, right? So the payment still becomes digital. I don't still continue to pay you, I buy check, just to give you an analogy there, So you may have a pre-sales activity which may be physical in nature, but the execution could have a larger acceptance of digital. So we need to really break any transaction into two pieces, advice and execution. So I feel more and more execution will be more digital, okay? And advice will, I feel, continue to, in case of larger tickets or some of the things, will continue to have, because some products are complex and which is not easy to understand, and it requires a bit of a solicitation before a guy takes a firm decision. Okay, so but will even the larger tickets happen digitally, the decision making will also, will also happen, but it will not completely go away. I mean, the human intervention or solicitation will continue. I don't think you can actually kind of get rid of that. And which is where, if you really look at all the tech platforms, whether it was Lenskart or whether it was Amazon, they all are building physical stores as well. So physical stores or physical storefronts or physical advice will always be there. You know, I don't think so that can be ever be replaced.
Right. And how come, what kind of push you towards this particular problem statement? I mean, were engaged in a separate project for quite a few years, and then you took plunge into One Silver Bullet. What was the origination?
So to me, when I'm looking at, let's see our own email boxes. We are always flooded with a few hundred emails. Okay, so whether it was my business-related emails. So when I looked at email boxes of various product manufacturers, we were always flooded with several things. And they were always actually doing a monotonous job which could have been done digitally. Yeah, and the amount of iteration which goes between the customer, the distributor and the product manufacturer is immense, and which is where your most expensive resource, which are your sales resource, they're actually doing more of an operational job rather than trying to really give a good quality advice. So I think this is what I experienced in my own firm, which I got an experience where I was being serviced as a client, and which is what I could see all my clients struggling with, okay, in earlier days of Miles. And which is where I thought that if there was a standard way of communicating, then everybody's invested into technology, right? The only thing is they're not integrated. Those systems don't talk to each other. The way today, whether you are using a Gmail and I'm using an Outlook, our emails talk to each other, right? So that's, and if somebody was to build that standard way of communicating, I think most of the softwares or the platforms or ERPs are willing to integrate with one single or a couple of standards so that the communication can become effective, and then I don't need to really punch in the transaction, or it can automatically be built into my own workflow. So, and which is what, looking at the inspiration of an email, which really, really inspired me to kind of look at building a standard way of creating a standard for communication for several financial products, and which did exist. You know, there was Swift existed, or UPI existed, you know, some of these things were in existence, and taking the cue saying, can it be done in more complex product? So if you look at Swift message, or Swift is a bit of a complicated message, but if you really look at UPI message, they're fairly simple messages, right?
Yeah.
And which could create such a big impact. But if you really take care of more complicated messages, it can really transform the whole way which we are transacting today.
Right.
So that was really, really something which really inspired me. And obviously, when I was making my own investments, I was signing a few hundred pages a day, which was extremely cumbersome.
Right. You know, when I was Like I was in the UK till 2016 and I saw like the rise of challenger banks, you know, branchless banking in the UK, and obviously fintech adoption in UK was pretty ahead of the curve for quite some time. But there, you know, traditional banking institutions were very badly hit in terms of, you know, migrating to the new wave of digital adoption. In India, the scheme of things have been pretty different. I mean, I feel that on one end, the regulator has to a certain extent made sure that, you know, the capital requirements which you need for underwriting are onerous enough that, you know, when it comes to lending or insurance underwriting, it's a small pool of people or it's a small pool of institutions, you know, who can do that. And the fintech players, more or less, you know, all of them realigned to become a kind of a very solid customer origination channel for traditional FIs. And correct. Also traditional FIs were pretty ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, adoption of, you know, digital first solutions. Like, I mean, especially in the private sector banks, you know, there are some banking institutions, like obviously if you look at the markets themselves, for example, ICICI, there's a lot of positive commentary on how they have, you know, kind of embraced digital in a major way. How do you kind of, you know, kind of, if you have to compare the attitude of traditional FIs in India, obviously with some amount of regulatory support, how are they performing in your book in terms of digital adoption?
See, one thing they have realized, digital is the way to go. You know, one thing they definitely know that they don't have a shortcut. But obviously, a disadvantage of any large institution is that it has its own bureaucracy to take a kind of a quick decision, you know. And sometimes I feel when you have too many intelligent people sitting in the same room, slows down the process of decision making, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think institutions are very smart, very intelligent, but too many smart people, it's like too many cooks spoil the broth, right? Is the situation with these institutions. This is how I would relate to them. And obviously the agility and the number of customers and the brand equity which they have, they think they're too much at risk for them to do anything very quickly. And right. Which is where they're usually very conscious, cautious about doing things. And obviously the fintechs, the founders of fintechs are entrepreneurs. They have the, I would so call it, the agility and the flexibility to kind of and take risks is there. So I think institutions want to do it, and which is where some of these institutions have tried to partner with these fintechs in multiple ways. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been successful. Some of them have been kind of doing it because there's a peer pressure. But obviously, institutions surely have to learn and also they have regulatory issues. You know, if they wanted to carve out a separate company which would do what another neobank would do, because they have their own selfish interest to push their own product.
Yeah.
And if I was an independent neobank, I am independent where I know that, oh, this is the best fixed deposit to sell and this is the best insurance to sell, or this is to sell. I mean, I'm completely unaligned. I don't have any constraints. So there are a lot of constraints which a large institution works with. But I think some of them, if you really look at it, have done a good job trying to do things differently. And I must appreciate a group like Tata, you know, and they're getting into several areas which I could never imagine.
Yeah.
So I think they have realized this problem lately, but I don't think we can write them off. Okay, so I think it'd be really unfair or an arrogant on a part of a fintech to feel that these larger institutions will not have the flexibility and the agility. No, some of them have and some of them are willing to do so. So I think some of them will become extremely strong and they will accept digitization to a complete extent. Yeah, so I don't see I don't think we can write off these institutions.
Right.
I think they know the advantage of being agile and nimble and so on and so forth.
So that looking at your business, sort of you're ideally positioned to sort of leverage and gain traction from the growth and digitization, because it's sort of a plugin that cuts across. So that sort of, I think, positions it very well. I mean, this was a fantastic chat. I mean, it was a lot of fun to hear you speak about the evolution and what you're trying to do. And these are sort of plays that we have also sort of come across. I mean, we loosely talked about Madhusudan, and he was here. Obviously, we haven't had Shopify guys, but we look at that business closely. And even in the gaming system, right? And you've also dabbled in the gaming space personally. But there are players who sort of allow, like in case of poker, there are poker companies who are using white label tech backend from someone else, right? So essentially, anyone can build a poker company today, because the entire backend API and payment collection, everything is sort of done by one or two operators. So it's an interesting SaaS play that's keep coming up. So it's very exciting to hear, and it was great chatting with you. So thank you for taking the time out, Milan.
Sure. Thank you very much for your time as well. Yeah.
Great. No, thanks a lot. And this was fun chat, Sharad. And
yeah,
we should hopefully next week is going to be the same.
Yeah.
Great. So this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran
signing off.